Hi, here we are. It's time for This Week in Mormons.
Yes.
What? Yes?
Oh, wait, was that an Irish accent I heard?
I was trying to do it to honor you, Al. Welcome to the show, everyone. We're happy to be here with you to talk about
it's
everything
our 32nd soul.
Now,
it's
I can't do it.
It's the 30th.
Al, of course, is joining us from Dublin, I believe, Al. So how's that going?
Hello? Yeah, I'm here in Dublin. It's lovely. I'm staying at a wonderful hotel by the river. I think the river's called Limley River.
Tell me more.
I don't think that's an actual name. It's the great river. Dublin's great. It's got a good little convention center. I'm at the, it's the RPD, RPS, something like that, where the big rugby team plays. We're having a conference there, and so I got to go and goof off on the field today while they had a guy mowing it with a push mower like a God bless American landscaper. I was very impressed. But, dude, Dublin's a blast.
That's good.
Have you been here?
No, I never went to Dublin when I lived in the UK, and which I regret. I've heard there's not a lot in Dublin. I heard Ireland's more fun to travel out west, go to Galway and the west coast and all that. But
well, Dublin was fun. I got here on Sunday, and I just walked around. So there's some pretty good eats here, good food.
Sure.
And then I stopped into a nice Anglican church and had a great sermon on Ebola and how that was partly a load of crock and partly the Lord's way of chastising his people. So that was nice.
Did you fail to find a local ward there? Is that what caused this?
Yeah, well, it was more like I was walking around at like 12:30-ish. And so I didn't even bother trying to find a Mormon ward. I found some nice believers in Jesus, and we worshiped together. It was,
there you go.
It was delightful. I was in my hoodie and jeans, and they welcomed me with judging eyes.
Given Ireland's strong Catholic heritage in the Republic of Ireland, the church has always been pretty slow going there, so much that they actually folded the Dublin mission a couple years ago now, and they merged it with the Scottish mission. So everything's run out of Scotland. I imagine if you get called to Ireland, you just still stay in Ireland for your whole mission. But now now it is the Scotch-Irish mission as one. So that's the church has always been slow. They got such a strong heritage, you know. When you got countries where people are more There's Catholic countries like France and Spain and Italy, Mediterranean Catholic countries that are more culturally Catholic and don't really do much with it. But then you got countries like, say, Ireland and Poland, who are more legitimately devoutly Catholic, and it is more of a challenge for church stuff. I remember when I was in Krakow in Poland, I ran into, I think, three different sets of missionaries, and I was just like, so how's the church here? They're like, there's one branch in Krakow. There's like a million people in Krakow. And they're just like, there's a branch of about 15 people. We're living the dream. And I said, all right.
We're fighting the battle.
That's how it is, but, you know, it's okay.
Yeah, I guess that's about right. But besides that, we had a great, went and found some cool castles. There's a castle,
Boo Radley Castle?
How about that for a name?
Boo Radley Castle.
Having a boo rattling moment, are we? No, Boone Raddy.
Atticus Finch.
Boone Raddy. So that was like, we were there and then we ate at Dirty Nelly's, spelled D-U-R-T-Y.
Now,
I mean, how great. How cute.
Was this a was this
went to the Cliffs of Moher? Cliffs of Moher?
Uh-huh.
Mar?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And went and got fish and chips at a place where they catch it right out in the bay. And like the fish and chips, it was in a 13-year-old batter. The start was 13 years old, and
really?
It was an entire fish. It was huge, and they deep fried it. Jeff, I was in heaven. I mean, you know me and food. I was in.
How does one? You hear about certain doughs, sourdoughs or yeasts or things being carried over for years. But how does one carry a batter for 13 years? Because batters.
Well, I think the key to a good fish and chips batter is you let the milk sit out for 13 years.
Okay.
I believe the milk turned into sort of a solid block that you just grate some milk lactose substance off of.
Sure, sure.
And then mix that in. I'm not 100% sure. I'm not a good baker or cooker.
Or fryer, for that matter.
Or fryer. But in my mind, that's sort of how a 13-year-old batch of batter looks.
Okay.
Correct me. Dear listeners, correct me if I'm wrong. I may very well be completely wrong, but I doubt it. I rarely am.
Uh-huh. That's it, sure, because none of our listeners even chimed in last week and chastised you for your wacky creationist points of view that you shared.
Did I? I knew I was going to take some.
I don't believe.
I was going to take a little bit of flack for it. I got more flack for having the audacity to suggest that at some point our approach to performing gay marriages with bishops may change than I did for any of that, though. And so, like, I'll take that. I'll take that. Some of the if you didn't listen to last week, we were just sort of sifting through some of the ways that people could interpret how some of this stuff, how the creation may have worked and the fall and all that kind of stuff. And there's a lot of opposing views and different ways of interpreting it. And the great thing about our church is it leaves it open to everybody.
Sure.
To sort of come to your own understanding of what that is. They don't come out and dictate how it's supposed to be. They say, here's what we know. Here's the questions we've had answered. Now you go and fill in the rest. And there were some people with some very good feedback. I had a couple of good comments on the website, and I was delighted. I enjoy my role as the pot stirrer. It makes me feel welcome and happy every time I stir the pot just enough to get somebody yelling at me.
And what will you do this week? Who knows? This isn't even scripted. We don't know what you'll say to offend
people. This is why I'm not married, though. I firmly believe if I could figure out how to not be an antagonist, I might have a better chance at succeeding in a relationship.
Yeah, I agree with that. You probably tease the women you date.
But enough about our bedroom talk, Jeff.
No. Yeah. There we go.
That's a dirty joke in case you weren't listening?
Nope. Just we don't do
bringing it back in.
We don't do those.
I had a great. One of our listeners shot me a note. She's a seminary teacher, and they were teaching she went to like a group, and or they were a bunch of seminary teachers talking amongst each other, and they were talking about the temple marriage stuff being changed. The story that we broke a couple of weeks ago. And one of the seminary teachers said, oh, yeah, I'm actually using that article. She had a This Week in Mormons article up. I'm using this article to explain to my class that we shouldn't try and get revelation from blogs and websites. Wait for it from the prophet. She was using us as the bad example. And I was like, well, I'm flattered. I'm flattered that we could be that role.
Did she read it? Did she read it right when it says, we are prophesying of nothing? Those exact words are in the article.
But Jeff, it was saying, this is what's going to happen. And there was a big stir. And she was like, the brethren have not said anything.
I never said this is what's going to happen. I said,
I know.
We said, according to sources, this is what will allegedly transpire.
And then we forced the church to come out and say, it's not happening anymore.
Yeah, I'm pretty proud of that. So that was good. I'm on the hunt.
We nailed it, Jeff. That was we pushed revelation back in where it came from because of our schmuckish ways.
Yeah. Okay, good. Good, good.
Everything about that sentence I know delighted.
That's fine.
Every last.
I don't care about the things that you say.
Carefully chosen word.
The things you say in private to me, I don't care about. I try to just regulate. You know, the presence of our brand. That's what I care about.
You do a great job. I feel regulated on often by you.
Good. That's the point. Regulators.
You're like the iron hammer. Wait, so how was your week, Jeff? How have you been?
I'm doing well. We're still on the go. I come to you right now from Colorado Springs. We are staying at the beautiful Broadmoor Hotel, a classic old America five-star resort. My wife has a big conference here. And I'm just hanging out.
You're at a five-star hotel?
Yeah. Oh, this is probably the nicest place I've ever stayed at in my life. But it's like old school service. In as much as they don't just, clean your room. They give us turndown service. But even beyond the turndown service, she asks if she wants, for her to bring us the robes so that we can wear robes while we're lounging at night. It's every little thing. It's very crazy. The one thing I refuse to participate in, though, is their ridiculous parking situation. Which is $22 a day to self-park.
What do they do?
And they try to get you because the valet is only $24. That way you'll say, well, why not? I might as well valet it and not worry about it. I, on the other hand, know that there's residential streets only two blocks away where I can park for free. So that's what I'm doing. It's great. It's awesome.
You are so cheap.
Yeah. I could think of things I'd rather do with $132 after six nights here. Definitely. Absolutely. So
what is a turn down service? That got offered to me at my hotel here, and I always say no because I think it's something sexual.
You think it's like some Vietnamese massage or something? No.
Jeff, you can never be sure.
The turn down service basically is when they come and especially if your bed has a top that's not a blanket and decorating pillows and stuff like that. They take all those and put them away. They pull your sheets down. They give us bottles of water and chocolates. They kind of get you set so that you can just be tucked into bed. It is unnecessary because like when they come in and ask, I kind of stand there and just say like, what? Like, I know, well, it's just a bed. I know how to get inside of it, but thank you.
I'd do it for the chocolate.
Everyone is so nice. All the employees smile at you. People open. I have not opened my own door in days. People open doors for us everywhere we go. It's amazing.
That is delightful. I want a 5-star resort service.
Do we have lag right now?
I want to be that guy. I don't think we have lag. Do we have lag, Jeff? Maybe.
Yes, we have lag. Yeah, we have lag right now.
You want to? I can call you back on Skype. You want to do that instead?
I don't know. This is all just live. This is what happens. Are we still laggy?
This is how it goes. All right. Anyway, keep going. I'm on hotel Wi-Fi. There's no telling what's going on.
Hold on.
Anyway.
What I'm going to do is I'm gonna talk, but then we're just going to end our call. It's going to be great. It's
going to
be
fun. We are going to end our call.
I don't have time.
Okay. I love you. Goodbye.
Folks, this is the problem with hotel Wi-Fi. Let me tell you about hotel Wi-Fi. It's the worst. It never works properly. It's because it doesn't have any good attributes. Low bandwidth. You know, you're like if you get like 2 megabits down.
Hey, I thought you wanted to get on Skype.
No, you can hear me now, right?
I hear you now.
See, we're fine.
Little Verizon man.
I was just griping about hotel Wi-Fi and how even if you stay at an expensive resort, they still give you like 2 megabits down if you're lucky. That's just how it is.
I know. Or they charge you $40 for it, which is the worst.
Which is also the worst. Anyway, though, we've been traveling. Colorado Springs is great. In between, what did we do since we last spoke? I was in Chicago last week. Chicago is a marvelous city. I greatly enjoyed my time there. Milwaukee.
What is it? The Millennium Mile? The Miracle Mile?
Yeah, all that stuff. We did
Miracle
We
Max.
Did lots of other things you would make fun of. And like I went up the Willis Tower and we stood out over the 4-foot glass window that sticks out from the building. So you stare straight down 103 stories.
Oh boy.
It was actually terrifying. That was good. Then we went to Milwaukee. And Milwaukee is Milwaukee. And there's not much more to say about Milwaukee, but I probably had the best meal I've had on this trip at a French restaurant in Milwaukee. So good.
What did you do in Milwaukee?
Well, more conferences.
Oh, good.
Lots of conferences. So we did that, then we came here. I would like to give a personal shout out to the Washington Park Ward in Denver, which is full of the nicest people I've perhaps ever met in all my travels as a Latter-day Saint. That ward.
Why? What did they do?
It was a small ward. It's like in downtown Denver. They don't have a lot of members. I'd say the median age is about 64, maybe. They're just very friendly, very happy to have visitors in general. They kept asking us if we were moving into the ward. Clearly, you know, they were excited about the prospect of that. But they were just so nice. They were just so – everyone came up and shook our hand and was just so pleasant. It made me sad that we had to leave. They were just wonderful. I just make a shout out to them. Also, they have a member of their ward named Robert Gibbons. And given one of our longtime listener friends named Robert Gibbons.
To there.
I was wondering if it was the Robert Gibbons, but it is not.
Why don't you just move to there, Jeff?
To Denver?
Yeah.
So far, Denver, I don't know, is really there. I don't know. Colorado's kind of weird. It's kind of ugly.
Wait. Remind me quick, is that where the Denver snuffer is? Is in Denver?
I don't remember. I feel like he's not actually, but I keep thinking he's in Denver. Also, great thing. I mean, I don't know when the last time was you were in Colorado. I remember, you know, you lived in Boulder years ago. But you walk the streets of downtown Denver on a Sunday morning. And after a while, we're sitting there. And my wife said, I totally forgot that pot is legal here. I've been smelling weed. Like while we're walking around downtown, and it took me like 10 minutes to remember that, oh yeah, you can just do whatever you want here now. And so,
oh please, you live in Jeff, you live in D.C. You can do whatever you want there too. It's just not legal.
Sure. And Al, I'm trying to get on Skype, but it will not allow it to happen.
Dang you, Jeffrey.
I hate you. I've always hated you.
Yeah, we're getting some serious lag going on, people. We are. We apologize 100%.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you there. I tried to sign in on Skype. It's just telling me Skype can't connect. That's all it's telling me.
Jeez, like your love life.
But okay. We're okay right now. So anyway, stuff's good. Denver's great. Well, now we're in Colorado Springs. Look forward to going home on Saturday. It'll be nice.
Well, that is exciting. Shall we discuss things of a Mormon nature?
Well,
Jeff, are there any of the comments or emails from our listeners that we'd like to address before we get going?
I can't think. There's none that jump out at me. Are there any that
we have a lot of angry discussion going on the temple marriage one still.
Yeah,
that's got a lot of comments and a lot of people that are just ticked for some reason. They're angry.
Well, it's gotten to the point where people aren't even commenting on the article. We just get comments so that they're arguing with other people on which
they go,
which is
bad alcoholic,
which is the purest nature of the internet at its finest. So I'm glad that we have achieved that level of internet awesome. But I can't think of any emails in particular or comments. If you had some, then you know, by all means.
Okay. No, I was just wondering.
Well, I would like...
I'm on your side.
Real quick. So we were going to do this article last week. Don't have to necessarily. There was an article, I think it was in the Trib, basically about how religious movies don't get a free pass from critics. And this was comparing sort of the great disparity there is between the tomato meter, if you're a Rotten Tomatoes fan, of something like Meet the Mormons. And then the user reviews, because Meet the Mormons got like 11% on Rotten Tomatoes, but it has like 92% from users. So like, what's up with that? And of course, there are plenty of movies people like that aren't critically well received. We all love National Treasure. Let's not pretend. It's a brilliant film. We all love it. Hitch, another classic. But the point of that article is just to say, hey, just because you made a documentary doesn't mean that it doesn't still have to be a good movie that tells a story and tells it well. And so by that measure, Meet the Mormons is a poorly made film, many critics would argue, not because of any alleged propaganda, but just because it's just like not well made from a narrative standpoint. Like, and I'll give them that because it really is just six vignettes that are just kind of...
isn't that not true? Don't we do give it a free pass? I mean, sure, like Rotten Tomatoes is going to hate it, but Rotten Tomatoes is going to hate it just because it's Mormon, I feel like.
I think there are many critics who hated it just because it was Mormon. But I think that's the point. Like you can make a religious and even a religious inspiring movie that could also be good from a critical standpoint. It's not the end of the world if it's not, you know. I mean, you know, it's not like critics are what define a movie's popularity. I mean, look at the Transformers series, right? So that's fine. Critics aren't everything. But that gap is pretty interesting. And I like, because we've had so many faith-based movies this past year, few of which have been well-received critically, but they've done well with audiences. So people like these, and maybe it's a place where the market can mature. And those movies will get better because we're showing that there's space in the market for them, that there are faith-based audiences that want to view things along these lines. And that's, you know, it's like anything else. I feel like we're sort of at the we're at the beginning stages of trying to get legitimate faith-based cinema to go mainstream, not just be niche.
But can it ever go mainstream? I mean, because there requires an element of suspending disbelief. It's the idea that I can't imagine there being a faith-based movie where like the kid prays and God answers a prayer and the critics are like, that's it. That was great. That worked very well.
I agree with you on that. Yeah. I don't know. So that's what I mean. Who knows? Well, we have to grow. Things could happen. Coupled with that though. Just an update on the Meet the Mormons box office, which I enjoy following to see how much it keeps tumbling. After, you know, it's been about a month that it's been out. This was its fourth weekend, this past one. So after starting strong, if you remember its second weekend, it tumbled 70-odd percent. Then it was about 70% again the weekend after that, even more so. 70% again. So it has not held well. It is a very front-loaded film. That doesn't mean it's a bad film. But it's more. But its drops are worse than poorly received horror movies. Horror movies often are very front loaded. But it's true. Horror movies are very front loaded, and they usually drop hard. Unless you've got the few that resonate more with audiences, like The Ring or The Sixth Sense, which is not as much horror, but you know what I mean. They tend to drop pretty hard. Meet the Mormons is defying all of those expectations with how much it is not even stabilizing after a few weeks. It was just. We got the word out, and after we got the word out, nobody wanted to get the word out anymore. Which is kind of funny, because if it was so important, do you think we could, Elder Holland could still be stumping for it 2 weeks in?
Jeff, we get out the vote, and then we go home, all right? Like, that's what we do.
So, but as we've talked about, I think, before, a couple of weeks ago, one of the big reasons they've done this, though, is because to get it on Netflix or on Amazon streaming, they needed to release it theatrically. That was the big part they're not talking about publicly, but that's actually what has gone down. Because they wanted to put it – I think initially they looked at trying just to get it out on Netflix and not worrying about it being in theaters. So either way, it will have hopefully served its purpose to legitimize it on Netflix. And also, if you don't know, the Joseph Smith film is on Netflix now, by the way, if you want to watch it.
It was on YouTube before. Now it's on Netflix?
Yeah, it's always been on YouTube, but now it is on Netflix, which makes sense because it did have a DVD release at some point. So it's been released for public consumption. But my understanding is it's the second edit, the one that focuses more on Lucy Mack Smith narration, which is okay, but I like the first cut better. So I'm kind of sad you can't watch that one.
When I was at Temple Square last week, on Thursday, I was walking around, and Thursday night, they had a bunch of people down there, like probably 30 people down there handing out Joseph Smith Lied DVDs. It's very weird. But like they were adamant about this DVD. They're like, you got to get this DVD, man. I was like, bro, I appreciate it, but I don't have a DVD player. This is the year 2014.
Not true. You have an Xbox.
Not anymore. Jeff, I'm moving. I've been selling stuff like
crazy. Why would you sell your Xbox? Unless you're going to buy an Xbox One when you move out here.
I'm going to buy an Xbox. Oh, yeah. That's what I'm going to do.
Okay. Well, that's fair. I support that. That's fine. So, yeah, you know, whatever. Faith-based films. And I would feel so awkward standing outside of... You got to have some serious, you know, gusto to stand outside of Temple Square and just be trying to pass out questionable DVDs or literature aimed at curing Mormons. That's not a task I would enjoy taking part in, I don't think.
Yeah, that'd be rough. Imagine if there were a Jehovah's Witness task force team. They're just like, no, we're out there to fix them. It's like, man, just let those people go. Let them do their thing.
Let my people go.
So let's see. There's another article that we missed last week that we were going to talk about. Ran out of time. But there was some discussion on discounts for being a good Mormon in Utah, which at first you're like, no, that's not a real thing. And then you're like, oh, wait. Like Mr. Mack, the suit company, gives you a discount if you're heading out on a mission. If you're good and worthy and have a temple recommend,
but is
you
it,
get a discount
is it,
on
it,
your suit.
Is it a general discount or is it a simple discount like you'd get at you know, the other places, a Men's Warehouse, where it's like, yeah, buy two suits, get some shirts for free. Or is it just a straight-up discount no matter what you buy?
It's the missionary discount.
But is that a pack? Is that a package deal where you have to buy a certain number of stuff from him to get the discount? Or if I go in there and just say, you know what, I just want a pair of shoes, and he gives me those wonderful rock points.
I don't know. I think there's an element to like you got to meet a certain criteria. You buy one suit, get one free, sort of thing that happens with that. But
Joseph, bank, yes,
yeah, dude. But then, I mean, it was just kind of interesting because as I started reviewing in my head all the places that, I mean, they give missionary discounts. You can go to KFC and you get a 15% off if you're a missionary.
Sure.
Sort of thing. Like, because they're all LDS people that own these things. And so they're just like hooking their people up. But in the end, it turns into like, at first glance, it's like, you got a temple recommend, brother? You're gonna pay a lot less. That's your Kama'aina discount when you go to Hawaii. It's your local card that gets you all the real prices that you've been looking for. Just kind of a goofy way of thinking about some of this stuff and how it's represented.
Sure.
It's like, oh, maybe there's something there that I mean, I don't know. Well, I don't necessarily. Do you have a problem with it, Jeff?
Like, well, it's a weird form of patronage in a way. I mean, I've got friends who are police officers in Utah, and they've, when they've pulled people over, many times people have taken out their temple recommends along with their license and registration.
Sort of the military card thing.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
exactly.
What's this, Navy? Oh, sorry.
Exactly. You say, look, I have a temple recommend, buddy. And then, like, the officer's going to say, oh, okay. Well, never mind. Just be better then. I've got one friend who actually said, yeah, and you know what? It says in the Doctrine and Covenants that we believe in, you know, sustaining the law. And so, good job with your recommend, buddy. I'm still giving you a ticket. So,
you should take their recommend and rip it in half. You don't deserve
this. This is the sort of thing that would exist anywhere where there's any majority socio-ecumenical culture, right? It could be, it's obvious in Utah, and especially so in Utah because it's the only place in America, or in the world for that matter, where Mormonism is so concentrated and so dominant. You can't go anywhere else and have that. And I think because of that, because it's such a special confined area, it lends itself even more to this special treatment thing. Because, you know, like, Catholicism is huge. So do you really think if you go worldwide just because you're a Catholic and someone else is a Catholic, they're going to be like, oh, let me take off 15% then, buddy. No worries. I got you.
It worked if you were a Mason. Why wouldn't it work if you were a Catholic?
Masons are just, well, Masons were more exclusive, much like Mormons. You know, so I feel like it's got to have that sort of niche appeal. But I still think it's lame. I mean, really, why?
I'll be honest. I still whisper, I'm an Eagle Scout every time I get pulled into a trial on my ticket, just hoping the judge will have something for me.
So this is a recurring thing for you?
Yeah. I walk in and they say, how do you plead? And I say, Eagle Scout. I'm sorry. I mean, not guilty.
I remember earlier this year when I went to traffic court and I was oddly nervous when it was finally my time. It was just so funny because you're up. I don't know how it was for you, but you're up for like 30 seconds. I mean, I got up there. Judge is like, how do you plead? I'm like, I think I said I was guilty.
No, you shouldn't say you were guilty.
No, well, because sometimes that's what you do. Because if you say you're not guilty and then argue about stuff, the judge might not be nice and give you traffic school. If you just say you're guilty, but here are the circumstances, I'd love to get traffic school and just wipe it all clean, they might say, cool, whatever. Because in Virginia, at least, if you get a judge to give you traffic school, the guilty plea is also off your record. So there's no record of a guilty, there's no points, no anything. But if you do traffic school without going to a judge, the guilty plea would be on your record, you see.
Remember when I got traffic school for riding the tram without a ticket to the airport?
I don't.
That was
I have no memory of this. I think.
Let's see. There's some other great stuff, Jeff.
Is there? Is there really? Tell me more.
Let's see. We have. There's a gal in op-ed written in. I'm assuming it was Deseret News. No, the Trib.
Deseret News would never carry this. Come on now. Don't be silly.
She didn't like the polygamy essays last week. So one of the issues that she had was that she felt like, so the church acknowledged that Joseph Smith had a 14-year-old wife. They mentioned it in there and they're just kind of like, these are the circumstances. At the time, it wasn't a taboo thing. This was just here was how it happened and the details surrounding it. And she said, whoa, 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 we got to come out and say we are sorry. You got to apologize for this. You got to make sure the people understand that this is wrong, this is not okay. And so, I mean, I think that there's probably a lot of people that share that, right? That are sort of on that same vein of like, it's fine for you to acknowledge it, but I want a little bit more.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Like, do you, Jeff, feel like the church did enough on that? Like, do they need to go and posthumously apologize for anything that Joseph Smith may have done wrong?
I don't think that's the right. Sorry. Go ahead.
No. What's up? You feel like I used posthumously wrong?
Well, you did use that wrong. That's fine. But
he's dead. It's over.
But you don't posthumously apologize. That doesn't make sense. Either way, it doesn't matter. I'm more patient with these sorts of things. I think when we talked about it last week, my big takeaway was, hey, this is a good start. I know this doesn't contain everything that we need to know about the subject. I know for a lot of people reading it, they would just say, yeah, I've known this for years. And that's good for them. And there are plenty of people that don't know these things. But I think it's a good start. And it's difficult for me when I see people who want what could really be positive change and good things to happen in the church, but they're very impatient with the way it should be done. They expect us to do radical 180s, you know, on a just turn on a dime. And that's not the way the church has ever worked. It's not going to be the way it works. And so I think the polygamy thing right now, we're making great inroads and are being more candid about stuff. Yes, there is more to discuss. Yes, there is more to be transparent about, perhaps. And in that sense, I think it's okay to hope for more. But I think then we...
Wait, you're dodging the question, though. Like if there's more that needs to be done, let's keep pushing for more.
Well, that's what I just said, though. We shouldn't necessarily be the ones pushing for more. I mean, like, you look at this article, and it's basically the same thing. Like, I'm disappointed in you, church, and I'm calling you out in public. I mean, that's fine, I guess, but that's not the route to be productive and make stuff better. I mean, that's you know, it doesn't accomplish anything, because the church isn't going to react and say, you know what, you're right. Thank you for mentioning this and ranting about things that upset you in the church and the Salt Lake Tribune. I think the question
is, should we be thrilled with the result, or should we sort of hold out waiting for more?
Well, can't you be both?
We can be an element of both, but I feel like if this isn't enough, you know, if we've been somehow wronged in this and I've been waiting for an apology, then this isn't enough. I mean, I don't feel either of those, and I never really have. But like, is there some sort of a responsibility to the church to come out and say, hey, so we talked about this thing. This thing happened. Now we feel the need to come out and say he should have never done this. But they're probably never going to do that because who's to say that he never should have done it, right? I mean, it genuinely was a different time and a different... Well, and like, I mean, maybe he shouldn't have. But like, without knowing the circumstances surrounding what happened outside of like a couple of journal entries that we have now, are we able to ever come out and say, oh, no. This man was wrong.
Well, I mean... I mean, you're not going to say Joseph Smith was wrong. And I don't think the church is ever going to back away from polygamy entirely. It's not. I think polygamy will exist.
It's part of our history. It's part of
part of our history. And like I said last week, I think it's going to be – it's probably part of the eternities. And it's just something that we've put away for the time being so the church can survive. And that's, you know, that's kind of the cost of doing business, I guess. But I will say, though, that I think her fifth point is okay. She says, if you keep the assertion that polygamy was God's will and Joseph didn't err – consider adding a warning that God cannot command a man, even a priesthood leader, to have sex with someone today, which is an interesting place to take things. As the brain's frontal lobe, which is in charge of functioning and da-da-da, is not fully developed until...
No, this is true even at the time. I still, man, I love that lady's response. I would rather be a virtuous woman and sent to hell than a saintly woman... Or a saintly whore going to heaven.
And that's a fair point to say, because one of the stigmas that follows the polygamy issue is the assumption, or people taking it to mean Joseph Smith was some kind of like a nympho or something like that, right? That he was – these were all excuses to have sexual relationships with a bunch of women and blah, blah, blah.
The Jeff Warren style of you are commanded to come to me. Now dance. Shake it, baby.
But like you – But like you said last week, Al, I mean, polygamy was the commandment. I don't think the Lord specified much beyond that. He didn't tell Joseph, like, create children with these women. Just said, have polygamy. And Joseph was doing the best he could. And in some cases, he did engage. He did have, you know, some were just for eternity and he had no other relationship with them. But he had some that were sexual relationships with women. And but like you said last week.
But no, yeah, nobody. Yeah.
Who's to say they know everything? So it's interesting, but I think it's the point of it is I don't know how effective it is to sort of try to throttle
I'm all
on
for
stuff.
I'm all for one I'm all for giving sort of reiterating that understanding that just because you've got a leader, like let's take for example how this scenario might play out today. Some leader who's a creepy guy and he has a weird mustache, and I'm speaking to you, all of you men with mustaches, and he comes to you and says, it's come to my attention that you and I are supposed to, I mean, you should absolutely be like, all right, hold on. Just because you're in a position of leadership or authority does not mean that everything I've been taught I need to question and go back on. Right? Like, we are smart, intelligent beings, and we have good, sound doctrine, particularly around you know, chastity and morality and things of that nature. Like, we have every right to say no. No, this is not right. I mean, we have so many of those kind of goofy bishops that'll, you know, they counsel and then, like, end up cheating with the mom of some, and you're just like, how do you let that happen? And it happens because people quit being accountable to themselves, and they start just saying, well, if, you know, well, you prayed about it, and God told you that we were supposed to get married, I guess we should. No. Right? Like, you're entitled to your own revelation. Make sure that things are checking out with you before you go along with it. Like, that should definitely be a point of emphasis.
Yeah, totally. Anyway. Yeah. So, but a lot of it can be about our approach. You know, when it comes to this thing, I just think it's good to raise issues and raise awareness and want more. But be careful with it. If you notice, I'm not trying to say correlation is causation, but the author, Christy Money, is a member of the Ordained Women Board. And I feel like her approach is reminiscent of Ordained Women's just general approach to try to get things done. It's not about patience. It's just about, like, drilling about the issue for a long time, hoping that eventually something comes about.
Yeah, which again, dude, I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with that if there's anything that needs to be changed, right? Like, let's keep going on it.
Oh, by the way, speaking of Ordained Women, might have seen last week that Kit Kelly lost her appeal to her stake president in Virginia to have her membership reinstated and be dexcommunicated. So that...
what does that mean, the dexcommunicated?
I combined D and X, and I made it say dex. Ergo, reinstated. If you're de-excommunicated, you are...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Or if you'd be communicated. She wants to be commuted. So either way, they denied her appeal. The Ordained Woman posted the letter from her stake president, which is pretty normal. They like to post every piece of correspondence that Kate gets. So they said, no, we stand by our decision. So now if she wants to appeal it, once again, she has 30 days, and it would go to the first presidency. And then, you know, this is just like the appellate court system in the U.S. It really is. Last stop, Supreme Court. And that's it. So if this gets up there to President Monson, who knows what will happen.
And so, like, do we have any insight into sort of the circumstances surrounding how that process goes? She appeals, the stake president and the first, or in the 70 look at it, or just the stake president?
I believe you...
No, this was right.
I believe you notify the stake president in writing that you still wish to appeal the decision, and then the appeal gets forwarded onto the first presidency. You leapfrog the 70 and everything else. It goes straight to the first presidency.
Huh.
Though there's a chance, I would assume, the stake president would liaise with the 70 to go through the proper channels and get it where it needs to go, right? I don't think a stake president's just going to call
it. Do you have any insight into what that actually looks like? Like, do they just say, we meant to do this, stamp approved? like, what does an appeal look like? Do you know?
Well, the appeal is just the appeal. If you remember, I'm sure the appeal is the exact same thing. If you remember when Kate Kelly appealed to her stake presidency, she wrote a 3-page letter. Her husband wrote a letter. You know, she explained her position, why she felt that she had not apostatized in any way, and that she was doing good work that she believed in, and she was trying to help the church, and she had not committed apostasy. And so that's the same thing. Your appeal is you effectively presenting your case once more to an even higher body and arguing your points and showing what it is that you believe in and what you have to offer and having them rule on it one way or another. I don't believe it would be anything involving like an in-person court once again. That's the different thing. You do appeal stuff in church discipline, unlike like the straight up legal system. And it's not like you have a trial again. You're basically just saying like, yeah, can we think about this one more time? I really want to stress my position. You know, it's not like you start all over with a brand new trial in that sense.
Okay.
As far as I know. I don't think they're going to be flying from Kenya to Salt Lake to meet with President Uchtdorf, if that's what you want.
Are they really?
No, I said I don't. It will not happen.
Oh.
It shan't.
Okay.
Will not happen.
Oh, I see. Yep. Interesting stuff. And obviously, we tweeted out, you know, sort of the circumstances around it, and right away Ordained Women replied and said, well, da, 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 da. We got one more appeal in us. We keep going.
Yeah, but then we responded with, okay. Because I think we just said, Kate Kelly lost her appeal, that's it. That's how we wrote it. Not that it mean that like it was done.
Yeah, they were like, no, she's got one more.
But it's done. I don't speak for the church, but I can't see why it would be overturned, you know? Especially...
Yeah, like, well, if it was going to be overturned, I feel like somebody would have stepped in and instructed...
The stake presidency.
At the local level, yeah, what was supposed to happen with a situation like that.
Because they're not... Because if it goes up higher and they overturn it, then it looks way different. Because then you've basically got the church officially from the first presidency... tacitly saying that what ordained women is doing is totally okay in the eyes of the church because you cannot be excommunicated for it. More,
which I mean, I feel like I should sort of highlight that if you're ever in a situation like this and you feel the need to appeal, you absolutely should.
Sure,
right? Like make sure that if you feel like you have a stake president who's got it out for you, and this stuff legitimately happens, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like I grew up in. In Crazy Town, Missouri. I mean, I've seen people, you know, like be lampooned by bishops and branch presidents and stake presidents and all along the way. And there's personal feelings that come in and all that stuff. And so, I mean, this stuff legitimately happens. And if you feel like you've been misrepresented somehow, yeah, please, by all means, like continue up the chain until you get a fair sort of person that hears your situation. With the Kate Kelly instance, I think that's what's missing is she got like it was a fair sort of approach to her scenario. In my estimation, this is how I'm viewing it from the outside. It's a fair approach to her situation. The sort of the verdict was handed down, and she's looking for a different verdict. She's not feeling like she was misrepresented in this scenario. She just feels like
the
verdict was wrong.
I do think so. I think
you're kind of going after the wrong thing there by looking for an appeal just because you don't like the verdict. Yeah,
a little bit, but I think she's actually
arguing
that she was not fully and adequately represented in that she didn't attend her own counsel and this and that, and they refused to disclose to her who was there and lots of procedural stuff.
It's just like that new podcast from that This American Life lady, Serial.
Yeah,
just like it.
But the other thing,
let's see.
One more thing on that, Al. On the flip side of what you were saying, also, if you are in a position of leadership and you're in the unfortunate position where you are engaging in disciplinary councils with someone, I think it's also good to bear in mind that if that person is trying to appeal a decision, it doesn't necessarily mean he or she is being belligerent or uncooperative or doesn't have a spirit of humility. In some cases, you know, they very...
Right, there's a process there for a reason.
Yeah. Because I think it's very easy from the other point of view to just say, like, look, we've ruled on this, and we hope that you'll come back to the fellowship of the church and get in line. And it's easy to say if that person is still kind of pushing an issue or feels frustrated with it, that they just don't get it or whatever. And it's, of course, a case-by-case basis. But just because someone does feel the need to appeal doesn't mean that that individual is not... striving to be cooperative, perhaps, and change things. I'm not saying that's Kate Kelly. I'm not saying that's anyone in particular.
Yeah.
But just, you know, good thing to bear in mind.
No, absolutely.
As you were, Al. Continue.
I agree. So I was just gonna move on. The CES modified their curriculum. We talked about this a little bit last week. But I kind of like it because it's sort of the same approach that Preach My Gospel took with missionary lessons, where like missionary lessons. Taught correctly, even back in the day, were more thematic based. It was more customized, sort of as we found need, you would teach that way. The ones that didn't do it well just kind of taught right by the book, right? And they said, well, lesson one is principle A, B, and C. The ones that did it well sort of gathered from everything, crafted their own lessons, and took the good parts and skipped the ones that didn't apply to their class and just kept going. And so now we're sort of doing a similar thing with the CES curriculum where we're moving from a chapter-to-chapter basis to a themed approach where the lessons have topics and sort of draw from all the standard works, which really, like at its core, is sort of how this should have been done all along. And maybe I'm being disingenuous in saying that. Maybe there was some sort of a, you'd have to teach Genesis chapter 1 today and Genesis chapter 2 tomorrow. But I feel like you could have taken the overall picture over the course of a two-week thing and broken it up into your own sort of lessons that were going to highlight the principles that were being taught, and it would have been fine. And so I'm excited about this. I feel like youth will respond better to this. It's going to make for better lessons, hopefully better teachers, and the whole bit.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, it's,
yes.
I think it could be. But let's break down, though, what the new – because this applies at BYU. as well, an institute. Because the current religion requirements, at BYU, you got to take two Book of Mormon courses, one Doctrine and Covenants, one New Testament, then elective courses. Old Testament's not even required. What they're shifting to is a class called Jesus Christ and the Everlasting Gospel, which is a study of the Savior and his roles in Heavenly Father's plan as taught across all the standard works. Then Teachings and Doctrine of the Book of Mormon. So that's a study of the teachings and doctrine of the Book of Mormon with an emphasis on Christ's ministry. Then Foundations of the Restoration, a study of the key revelations, doctrine, people, and events of the Restoration. And lastly, the one
that's... The classes are no longer Book of Mormon 1 and then Book of Mormon 2, right? But, like it's...
Well, the last one, though, is the most, you could say, controversial. It's just called The Eternal Family, a study of the central role of the family in the plan of salvation as taught in the Scriptures and the words of modern prophets. And I don't think there's anything wrong with it
per se. That sounds awful.
Per se, but I think it's very interesting to make one of the required courses The Eternal Family, especially because the things we would have taught if we gave that class 30 years ago would be totally different from what we teach now, which is interesting when you're teaching a course about the eternal principles of the family, you know. But
I think the world's view on family would have agreed with our view on family a lot more 30 years ago.
Easily, yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of our...
It wasn't as needed.
Yeah, a lot of...
I like this, though, and I like the idea of being sort of a morphing approach to this. I feel like it's a healthy thing.
I think one of the risks here, and that we've seen that with some of the youth stuff as well, is if we drift away from the Scriptures and start to focus more and more on recent conference talks. And there's other conference talks are, you know, it's Scripture, effectively. It's good. Mm-hmm. It's good to use. It's important. We love it. But there's a real power in understanding the Scriptures, not just because of a topic, because a verse says something on a topic, but understanding the context, the history, and in some cases the chronology helps to set the scene a lot better, especially in the Old Testament, which it's sad for me we put such little focus on it. I do think there are good benefits that we can take away by, I'm not saying we have to study everything chronologically, but I just hope we don't lose that value in that context, especially in an eternal family class, because the Scriptures don't actually say a lot about the role of the family. Like, read the Book of Mormon and tell me how much real stuff there is in there about
Jeff.
No, there's stuff in there, Jeff. But come on, compare that to general conference talks.
Jeff.
School me.
Just the simple fact that we're leaving the idea of going Mosiah chapter 1, Mosiah chapter 2, Mosiah chapter 3. That we're not losing anything by doing that. When you go and approach a topic or a doctrine and you introduce a scripture, the responsibility of the person introducing the scripture still remains to give chronological context, to give sort of the cultural context. I mean, you're learning to kind of build that foundation a lot better than you would be assuming that everybody's following along with you. For instance, if you read through in the Doctrine and Covenants and start with section 1 and go all the way through, there's part of you that feels like you should be going in chronological order. You're not. Neither are you going in geolocation order, right? You're not going from New York to Palmyra to Kirtland to Independence.
Yeah. It's not.
Right? And so as you read that, there's part of you that gets lazy with that and you don't introduce it as adamantly as you would if you were just introducing section 8 out of the blue. And giving the context around that. So I actually think we're going to be doing a better job at teaching some of this, and hopefully the students in the system will learn it better because they're forced to approach it on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah. I don't think it's altogether bad. It'll be interesting to see how it...
I don't think it's bad at all. I think it's altogether good.
Well, but it's interesting, though, that they actually are still leaving some of the old lessons as options. They're not getting rid of them altogether. But so... I don't know. We'll see. It could definitely be good. But I'm just going to wait and see what happens. I just worry so much that I feel like little by little we are getting away from actual scripture study and like knowing the scriptures and really studying the scriptures. Because topics are great and they're valuable and they're fine. But I feel as Latter-day Saints, we're not the greatest scriptorians when it comes to really understanding the history and the deep dive stuff in the scriptures. And it's one thing... I get it when you don't get that in 30 minutes in gospel doctrine, but if you're at a university, that's an opportunity, and it shouldn't be reserved only for those who are actual religious studies majors who are into it. I feel like I just don't want to lose the power that comes and really understanding the historical implications that go along with scriptures, as opposed to just knowing that in Amos, it talks about that God reveals nothing to his prophets in Amos 3:7. And it's like you're reciting a scripture because it's scripture mastery, effectively. It's also good to understand who Amos was, why Amos said the things he did, who were Amos's contemporaries, what was going on in Judah at that time. Stuff like that, which I don't want to get lost. I'm hoping it doesn't get lost. That's all.
Yeah, okay. That's all. I'm fine with that. One other great one. I'm just jumping topic to topic here, but there is a there is a movie called
this movie.
I think it's just called The Missionary.
It's just called Missionary.
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 Now I'll read you a little synopsis and then give you my take, like my understanding for the trailer. So the synopsis is: Catherine is a struggling mother trying to create a better life for her and her son. She meets Elder Brock. I can only assume she's talking about Elder Brock Barton.
Of course.
She meets Elder Brock Barton, a handsome Mormon missionary with a troubled past, and they begin an incendiary love affair.
No.
But when Catherine reunites with her estranged husband, Elder Brock Barton can't accept that things are over, and he will stop at nothing to prove to her that they are meant to be together forever. So you like the trailer for this is kind of awesome, right? Like the missionary meets this woman and he's somehow alone all the time and his companion is just nowhere to be seen. And then he turns into this great villain, like this dark, evil man, sort of a Walter White in season 5-ish.
But only season 5. He's a saint, all the other ones.
Well, he's a conflicted character, all the rest. So this movie, it's going to be rated R. So, like, again, I mean, probably not a great one to go watch. But I kind of, like there's a history of Mormons being the subject of some of these. So people don't feel like this is an attack on the church. It's a great plot line. It's sort of an unexpected villain that you would never think about, blah, blah, blah. I kind of enjoy that this is happening. I think it'd make for a great horror flick. I don't know the movie. I've never seen it, but like I hope that it's well done and would be a really scary movie. I think it could be.
I see it more as a suspense than a scary movie, but yeah, it doesn't look well done. It looks like it was done on the cheap. It's not. We're not talking good production values here. But
no. But taking into account all of the other Mormon-themed sort of theatrical releases that were done by non-LDS people, or even LDS people, like it's not hard to stand out from the crowd. I don't feel like.
No. So yeah, this film. I mean, I don't know. The whole plot. It's like yeah. And I do like.
Do you feel like it's sort of an affront to the church?
No, I don't think it's an affront to the church because it's. I think part of the Mormon moment, part of us being more mainstream, is that movies like this can happen. Because has there never been a movie about rogue Catholic priests or other religious people who have done things wrong, even though they weren't supposed to? Like they've gone against their own beliefs because of something else? Of course not. I think as Latter-day Saints, we get more offended because we view the symbol of the missionary as something very, very pure and good. And we don't like that being dragged through the mud necessarily. But as it is, I mean, the movie looks stupid, honestly. I don't think it looks like some amazing film.
You think it looks stupid? The trailer, I think.
Oh, my gosh. The dialogue could have been written by M. Night Shyamalan. It's terrible. I mean,
that's all I'm looking for. Them, anything.
They're making out. And then when he's like, that husband is back. We'll put the trailer up on the post with this episode. So.
It's like, I know. I'll have your wife.
And then not just the wife. When the returned husband is like, why are you playing with my son still? And he basically just says, just like I replaced you with your wife, I'm going to do the same with your son. He's basically, they're making Fatal Attraction.
And then he calls her and he's like, have you checked the children?
Yeah, it's.
And she's like, no!
It's Fatal Attraction with a missionary. That's what this is. And it is spectacular.
Anyway, it's out there.
Speaking of thrillers, though, the Deseret News had an interesting article into last week about a father and son who are both writers who say that the horror genre is not incompatible with their faith. And I don't think I'd ever thought in my mind that horror was incompatible with Mormonism, but I guess you could see how culturally we would find horror movies to be sort of a lowest common denominator type of thing and stay away from them. But there's a difference between scary horror that's not exploitative necessarily. It's just horror, you know, and slasher movies. And I don't think these guys are writing graphic slasher stories. But you can write a scary horror book or make a movie that's just tense and freaks you out and not
have. I thought that that's what the what is that terrible vampire book? I can't think of it. I thought that's what that was a horror.
Which terrible vampire? You mean Twilight?
Yeah, Twilight.
Twilight wasn't. No, is that not a horror? Twilight was romance and action.
Oh,
and
boy.
Indians who, you know.
I need to read that.
No, you don't. But it's a good read. It's not something I ever thought much about. I'm sure plenty of us have watched horror movies in our day. I think there are those who don't like them. I think there are Latter-day Saints who legitimately love big gory movies even, which is weird to me, and I hate them. But whatever, you know, pick your poison, I guess. But there's nothing wrong with suspense and a good scare and playing to our basest fears. Right? That's what horror is. That's what horror is. Horror is not a guy with a pickaxe just chopping people up. Horror is deeper than that. Yeah.
I can neither confirm nor deny. Okay.
Well, that's all.
I love horror. I don't mind
tense movies that scare you, but I've never liked stupid slasher films or stuff like that. Even in the days when I would watch R-rated movies, I never liked those. They're terrible. They're just
Neither here nor there. We got a few more good ones. Let's see. Henry B. Eyring is off to the Vatican
in a couple weeks. Yeah,
for a chat with the people that be on family and marriage.
And which people be in the Vatican?
You know, the Swiss people. It's the Swiss army there. They just want to talk, and then there might be a pope.
So President Eyring's only going to make it to the guards. And they'd be like, this is where we leave you.
they invited him to the front.
And he's just going to stand there and be like, so what do you do, Hans? Be like, oh.
Dude, how great would that be there in your hat and your overcoat? They're just like, this was as we intended. Yeah. He's like, so you guys have any thoughts on marriage?
But it's a.
Are you defending it? And they just have their swords there and they're like, yes. It's like, good.
And so for a little more context, this is being held. The Vatican's putting this on, but you've got scholars from 14 faiths and 23 countries. This is including Muslims and Jews, so I guess this is limited to Abrahamic faiths.
I've heard of those guys.
But, you know, Pastor Rick...
Magellan, yeah, he did a pretty good job.
Pastor Rick Warren will be there, and it's going to be this big old thing. So the Pope will actually speak as sort of the opening keynote speaker. President Eyring, who will also be accompanied by L. Tom Perry and Bishop Gerald Cousset of the...
If you're going to go to the Vatican, you better send the L train.
Oh, yeah, because he's the biggest one. If they try to mess with him, he's just going to stand there and be like, what?
Yep.
So all of them will be there, and they will be speaking, and it will be interesting to watch. So keep an eye out for this November 17th through 19th. We'll, of course, post things as they come up, but about 2 weeks from now, it'll be pretty interesting to see how this goes with President Eyring just rocking the Vatican. Let's see. I've got some quick ones here. I love this one. Now the Women's Conference, after Prayergate, is officially part of General Conference.
After Prayergate. The prayer is still bleeped.
Yeah, the prayer is still bleeped. But hey, so first they said, hey, we're in General Conference. And the church is like, well, not so much. And now the church's newsroom has officially declared that it has been decided that the women...
I feel like this is in direct response to the demands made by the Ordained Women movement.
Absolutely. It's only because of them and no one else.
They said, all right, I guess it makes sense. We include priesthood, I guess. Why not include women?
I see this being more the kind of thing where that happened. For whatever reason, President Nuchdorf said it. And then people took it as a cue from him in their own prayers and remarks, like Elder Carlson, and said what they said. And then the church was like, whoa, 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 hold on, let's back up. And then when the Prayergate thing started going around social media, maybe they thought more and said, eh, it's fine to do this. Well, I guess
we enacted change. We enacted change.
So that happens, folks. So now General Conference will officially start the week prior, and then you have the whole week in between to have workshops and stuff. It'll be great.
I got one more quick one here. Let's see. So there's an article which I love because this was my life. In the Deseret News, there's an article about it says, why aren't our kids going to church dances? And apparently, people aren't going to church dances anymore. Only like 20 people are going, and mothers are forcing their children to go, and they don't want to be there. Well, guess what, folks? This is how it's always been. And this is what it's supposed to be. Your mother will give you a guilt-tripped sort of rendition of, guess what supporting your leaders means, Al? And then you go there and think that you're going to be cool as a 14-year-old. And so you stand in the back. You stand in the back with your curly-haired, white afro friends, and you just stand there. Because you got too much acne to ever have the guts to go ask a girl to dance. And this is your life. You go to every single one of these, and you hate them. And you hate them until you're old enough to have a little group of friends. Then you go and you figure out how to have fun. Normally, this involves standing on the dance floor and just talking. You don't dance, people. You don't do that. You just don't. And then the one girl that tries to dance, you think she's being dirty. And you go home and tell your bishop about the girl that tried to dance with you. Like, this is what growing up is. This is all of our experiences with this. So let's not feel like kids today have some sort of a special circumstance. She's talking about, like, giving him, my son doesn't want to go to dances, so if he dances with three girls, I'll give him talk about, well, bribing is fine, right? I took my fair share of bribes. I got a lot of chocolate milks on the ride home with Dad because I asked a girl to dance at the very last moment. And he spent 2 hours sweating as you built up to that. The worst was the New Year's Eve dance, because it went for like 4 hours. That was brutal. That I earned every bit of that bribe. But like, this is what parenting is. So suck it up, you moms who are sad that your kids hate steak dances. Guess what? You were a girl that went to steak dances. Your life was charmed. You all loved dances. The guys, this was the most awful, horrific thing you could have possibly put us through. And we went through it.
They were terrible, especially because they let you go to dances when you're 14, but you're not supposed to date until you're 16. So it's like you're there to kind of get your groove going, I guess, and get comfortable talking.
You're there to just touch ladies of the opposite sex. That's all. You're going to hold her hand and put your hand on the very highest on her back, because you've heard that it's dirty boys who put their hand down on the buttocks. Oh, no, no. That's not going to be you. You're going to show her how respectful you are, not by putting your hand on the small of her back or on the shoulder. You're up almost grabbing her ear. Like, just to show how respectful of a 14-year-old you are, because you do not want to be misconstrued. And then when you finish the dance, some people hug. You shake hands because you're classy.
Or you get this unlucky and the girl you meet tells you that she intends to feel a man's hand on her before.
Dude, steak dances were the most traumatic thing. Like, I can't imagine a worse thing, but it makes you
I never liked them, the youth dances, when I was young. I thought they were terrible.
No, they were awful.
Terrible. Oh my god. Like, but isn't it, I guess it's just to get used to girls.
The scars, the mental scars I have.
Because what's the fun of going and dancing with a girl you think is cute or something if you're not even dating, because you're not 16 yet? You're just like, well, this is good. Let's just maybe keep this correspondence going for 2 years. And then
I want you to stay right where you are. And I'm going
to
circle
back. But there is something to say about getting boys comfortable to be bold and confident with women, because I do think it's an issue we face in this day and age that because of cell phones and video games and all these things, guys more and more are wimps when it comes to dealing with women and knowing how to talk to them and be upfront and be confident with them. And so I could see parents being concerned about that, because your son is going to be a lot happier, like, to just come home and play on his Xbox.
Oh my gosh, the trauma.
Then he is
still,
you had.
I can go back in my mind to, like, I'm sweating now just thinking about
you,
it. I'm involuntarily passing gas just remembering those moments.
You had trauma, but it probably taught you lessons and made you more confident with women, didn't it? Mm-hmm. I bet.
No, not at all. It was not until I came home from my mission and had been home for a good full year before I started braving the woes of women. Like, there's nothing about it. It doesn't fix anything. You just go there and learn to cope with the social anxieties that we all suffer. Like, that's what steak dances
do. Yeah, pretty much. I love the mom's idea to give him a card and then let him go to the snack bar once he does three dances. Because that's what women like to be reduced to, a punch card for loyalty visits. When they say,
"Can you give..."
You get three punches and you get one for free. That's what women
love. I'm really here because I get a free 7-layer burrito if you say
you
yes.
Walk up and you finally get some of that onion dip and you're like, I did it. I danced with four chicks. Now give me the dip so none of them will come close to me afterwards. That's my goal. Brilliant. Well, there's some other stuff, but you know what? I think we're okay calling it. We're done. It's okay.
I think we got it. We did it.
We've had some
good work. Anyway, people, you are welcome to come say aloha. Send us an email at thisweekinmormons, contacts@thisweekinmormons.com, or leave a comment on any of our posts. We are at thisweekinmormons.com. We love to read them and rebut them, mock you as you mock us. It's a mutual mock.
Pretty much.
Thing.
Also, of course, if you leave good reviews on iTunes or Stitcher, those are great, and we love reading those, or even posting them to our Instagram account. And you can follow that Instagram account, as well as our other social media outlets. We're on every one that you can imagine, except for Orkut. We don't exist there. So don't look for us.
Dear Portuguese listeners, you won't.
We also do not have an Elo page. That's another problem. I don't think they even have pages on Elo, so that's okay.
Yeah, it's not a thing yet.
But please visit us on those places and look out for the usual other podcasts to get through Gospel Doctrine and Priesthood and Relief Society. We'll be putting those together for you as always. And
boom.
Awesome. Enjoy Ireland, my friend. When we speak to Al again, I believe you will be in Prague or in Germany. I don't know which.
Neither do I, but I love you and I'll talk to you.
So we'll continue Al's European adventure. Until then, everybody, have a good one.
All right. See you, buddy. Con su canción es que muy sentida y muy guajida alegre cantó.